From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And I want to begin today by acknowledging what has been unfolding in Israel over the past few days. Brutal and systematic attacks by the group Hamas left hundreds dead and scores abducted, including civilians. Those attacks were launched from Gaza, which Hamas controls, and so Israel has been responding with airstrikes there. And the human cost of this long conflict is only going to intensify in the days, weeks, and months ahead. And what a time it is for the most representative portion of our government to be functionally incapacitated. It's been 1 week since U.S. Representative Kevin McCarthy of California was removed from his role as Speaker of the House of Representatives. I've been wanting to talk about this with someone who has an inside perspective on the operations of the modern House Republican Conference and the Republican Party more broadly, but also someone who has a little distance and might be willing to speak a little more candidly than someone who's still running for re-election to the House. Rodney Davis represented Central Illinois in Congress for a decade. A Republican from Taylorville, he's now a managing director at Cozen O'Connor Public Strategies, a firm in Washington, D.C. And this fall, he's also been named a fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School Institute of Politics. Rodney Davis, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Well, thanks, Brian. Glad to be on.
Listeners, as ever, we want to invite you to join our conversation today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And I should also say, after a bit of a hiatus owing to some technical issues, our text messaging service is back online. I will have some texts from you to share throughout the conversation. So, Rodney, I just want to start. Take us back to last Tuesday. Where were you? How were you following what the House was doing when they were voting on whether to remove Speaker McCarthy from his role?
Well, Tuesdays are probably my busiest day here during my Harvard fellowship. Usually have office hours in our study group and numerous meetings. And during my office hours was when the vote to remove Kevin McCarthy was taking place. And it was a great learning experience for the students that were coming in to talk to me about what was happening in Washington, because I could give them perfect examples of why a certain person is voting to remove Kevin versus why others are not. It was a tragic day in American history, in my opinion, where you had a small group of individuals who decided to put themselves over the direction of the country. And frankly, Kevin McCarthy, I thought, was doing a great job as Speaker. He was somebody who was willing to make the tough choices to govern, something I like to think I prided myself on doing in my 10 years there. But in the end, he wasn't successful. In the end, governing to make sure that we saved trillions of dollars in taxpayer money with the debt limit deal, more so than we've seen in history in a long time. Along with making sure government didn't shut down and cost taxpayers more to reopen, were the reasons why these arsonists, I would like to call them, decided to make Kevin McCarthy the first ever speaker to be kicked out of office with a motion to vacate.
You know, it's interesting. I like listening to a wide variety of opinions across the political spectrum. One of the places I get that is the National Review podcast, conservative magazine. And they made the sort of ironic point that Representative Matt Gaetz, who was, of course, the person who filed this motion, was so angry that McCarthy was working with Democrats to avert the government shutdown that he himself decided to work with Democrats to remove McCarthy. I wonder how you see that.
Oh, I agree completely. It's absurd. I mean, is Matt Gaetz the only person in America that can rationalize his own behavior and his own working with the other party and rationalize that against Kevin McCarthy for doing what's best for the government and best for our country? There's no rhyme or reason. It's 100% personal, and it's 100% about Matt Gaetz wanting to go down in the history books for personal gain. In his own opinion, I don't even know why he would consider this gain, but I'm sure he wants to be known in the history books as the member of Congress who took down the first Speaker of the House with a motion to vacate. And he got that. And frankly, that's why I don't think this Speaker's race that is happening right now to fill Kevin McCarthy's vacancy is going to be done anytime soon. And I think it's a tragedy for where we are as a country today to not have a functioning house of government at a time when we're seeing the conflict in the Middle East, the terroristic attack by Hamas and incursions into Israel. We need leadership. Now's not the time to want to put your name in the history books for something that is absurd, but that's exactly what some of my former colleagues on both sides of the aisle would put ahead of what's best for our country.
Okay, a couple of things to unpack there. I do want to come back a little later in the conversation to where you think this is going. You mentioned you think this is not going to be resolved anytime soon. And I do want to come back to that both sides of the aisle idea here. But I want to stick with this idea of what happened to McCarthy, his fate, and whether maybe he sealed his own fate. I mentioned our texting group. People can sign up for that by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. That's TALK to 217-803-0730. One of the questions we asked this morning is whether people thought McCarthy's removal was fair, whether he was treated fairly. And Jim in Danville said, fair has nothing to do with it. McCarthy put himself in that position and got what he wanted. How could he expect anything else to happen? Rodney Davis, I mean, you know that he had to make a lot of compromises in order to get the speakership. Do you think he bears some responsibility for putting himself in this position?
Well, Kevin McCarthy knew the motion to vacate would come once he put a continuing resolution for 45 days on the floor to avoid a government shutdown, which is what the majority of Kevin McCarthy's conference of Republican elected members of Congress wanted to happen. I mean, they want over 200 Republicans stuck by Kevin McCarthy through every vote to make him speaker, all 15 rounds. The group that took him out is a small minority, but that was a House rule that Kevin McCarthy agreed to. He agreed to that rule partially, and you can see this in public statements from Kevin, that then Speaker Pelosi had actually said, go ahead and agree to it. We'll make sure that that motion to vacate is never used. Well, Democrats had a chance to prove that they wanted to be part of governing or if they wanted to put political chaos to the forefront. They're part and parcel to this right now. And they cannot walk away and say that we are the governing party when they chose this chaos by banding together instead of asking themselves and asking Kevin McCarthy and Republicans, what can we do to work together to stop this madness from happening because of a personal beef between one of your members and you as the speaker?
You know, that's a really interesting point. So, and we did get a text on this. John in Harvard, Illinois, not Harvard where you are in Cambridge, but Harvard, Illinois, said it was stupid, short-sighted, and petulant that the Democrats didn't use this opportunity to save McCarthy and get a lot of what they wanted. Instead, childish revenge got the best of all these so-called leaders. Again, that's from John in Harvard, Illinois. Thank you for the message. I got to say, I'm not sure McCarthy even appealed to the Democrats for help on this particular speaker vote, but what do you think of that?
Well, he didn't, and he knew his fate when not a single Democrat decided to stand up and vote for him or take a walk, vote present. That would have been a choice of governing. And it's less about where Kevin McCarthy and Hakeem Jeffries would have talked on their level, and more about their existing groups, some of them I was a part of during my career in Congress. I was not a part of the Problem Solvers Caucus. And that caucus exists as an equal bipartisan group to focus on governing. And I know there were discussions within that group as to what they would need and rules changes to make the House operate better. But the Democrats on that caucus have shown me over the years that they have yet to vote against Democratic leadership on any major issue since the inception of that caucus. Republicans, on the other hand, that were part of that Problem Solvers Caucus, some of them voted to impeach a Republican president. Some of them voted for rules packages that were against what the majority of the Republicans wanted. And in the end, I think it's caused a rift in that caucus. And the Democrats choosing chaos, along with the small group of Republicans choosing chaos, has really hurt the fabric of the institution. And you can't have an organization that partners itself with an outside group called No Labels on the political end. And No Labels is going around the country searching for a presidential candidate who will govern. And your members in Congress on one side, choosing chaos versus asking for some rule changes, like number one, getting rid of this one person motion to vacate, could have had some rules changes that would have made the House more open, more transparent. I think the Republicans, many Republicans would have accepted that. But instead, politics reigned superior that day. And now we're in somewhat of a leadership vacuum, as I mentioned earlier, that I think has some tremendous impact on global interactions throughout the world.
You know, I do try to really put myself in the mind of an elected official and think, like, what are the factors they're thinking of, right? Bigger picture things, the functioning of our democracy, of course, but also re-election is on the mind of a lot of members. I'm just trying to imagine if for example, if the squad, right, the ultra-progressive members of the Democratic caucus had somehow managed to get a motion like this to remove Speaker Nancy Pelosi, do you think you or other Republicans would have ever cast a vote in favor of keeping Speaker Pelosi? I mean, that would have been political poison on the campaign trail for you.
Well, look, you have individuals who represent different districts. I mean, I'm a prime example of that, Brian. I kept a district, much to the chagrin of some of your listeners, in the central and southwestern Illinois area that was drawn to elect a Democrat. Represented that district for 10 years. The new district I was thrown into by Democrats in Springfield gerrymandering congressional districts like they did was an R plus 22, a distinctly different district that doesn't value bipartisanship. Look, I touted my bipartisan credentials when I was in Congress, and I think it helped me in the general election to be able to win a couple of very close races and three others that were not close at all. I think there are a lot of members like me that would look for bipartisan principle compromise to make sure that we didn't blow the house up. So the answer is, based upon a hypothetical, yeah, I could see Republicans do that. You had many Republicans vote against leadership on a lot more high profile votes, like impeaching a Republican president. So yes, I do think Republicans have a history in the House over my 10 years of being much more independent than the Democrats. And that's something I'm willing to debate anyone on, because I witnessed it, I've seen it, and I would expect more from those who said they also want to govern but are on the Democratic side of the aisle.
Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455 with Congressman Rodney Davis. And Nancy is calling from Northern Illinois on line 4. Nancy, thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Mr. Davis. And how are you today?
I'm doing great, Nancy. How's the weather in Northern Illinois?
Well, it's chilly. I mean, you know, it's going to get that way. But what I wanted to talk about was that Mr. McCarthy, it doesn't really matter to me personally. I'm an independent, and I personally don't really care either way, because I had seen it coming. I had seen it coming that they were going to kick him out. And that, with that being said, Mr. Davis, what I wanted to say is Mr. McCarthy is lucky that he's still a member of Congress.
Interesting. Well, there wasn't. Yeah, go ahead, Rodney.
Nancy, he's a member of Congress because the people of his district in California elected him to be a member of Congress, and he'll be a member of Congress until he chooses not to be or loses re-election. So it's not up to anybody else to kick Kevin McCarthy out of Congress. That's his right by winning the election, just as it's the right of 434 others to stand there and represent the constituents that sent them there. And that's why we have such a wide variety of individuals with different viewpoints and varying viewpoints that represent districts throughout this nation. Look, my old district that I represented, an AOC, Alex, would not be elected in my district. And I certainly would not be elected in her district in New York City. But that's what makes Congress operate, because it represents everybody in America. And when you look around, you have to realize that there are a lot of members who are there not to legislate. And those are the right and the left side of our polarized political environment right now. But most individuals in Congress, Republicans and Democrats, should want to go. And they've proven that they do by avoiding the government shutdown, by voting for the debt limit negotiation, a negotiated agreement that passed a few months ago that Republicans a decade ago would have loved. And Nancy, I'm glad you're an independent. But until independents get elected to serve in Congress, you will have a Republican conference and a Democratic conference. And the rules of the House, the way our forefathers set the House up, is those that party who has the majority has the ability to put in place their speaker. And it is a very leadership-driven institution. So Republicans put in Kevin McCarthy, and because of a rule that he agreed to, he got taken out. I wish he wouldn't have agreed to that. Yeah. And yes, he probably knew it would happen eventually, but that doesn't make it any more correct to do.
All right, we're going to need to take a break. Interesting fact, House Speaker, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, still in Congress and actually planning to run for yet another term in Congress, last I heard. We're going to continue with Rodney Davis when we return. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking with Rodney Davis, who was formerly a representative in Congress from the 13th District across much of central Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, Springfield, and parts of the Metro East, the Illinois side of St. Louis. Nowadays, he is managing director at Cozen O'Connor Public Strategies, a firm in Washington, D.C. He's also this fall a fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School Institute of Politics. We are talking about what has been happening in the Congress, particularly in the House Republican Conference, as last week a small group of Republicans, really Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida, filed a motion and was joined by a handful of his colleagues in seeking to overthrow Speaker McCarthy. The House is functionally incapacitated right now, most experts say, until there's an interim speaker, but it can't really do anything except select a permanent speaker. And so we're talking with Rodney Davis about how that might go. 800-222-9455. We're going to be continuing this part of our show for about another 15 minutes. Again, 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. So let's talk about what's coming next. It seems like the leading candidates for Speaker are Representatives Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise. You, of course, are close with Representative Scalise. You were present when he and three others were shot by a left-wing activist. The FBI ultimately declared a domestic violent extremist. He was with you at the Illinois State Fair a couple years later. Do you have a preferred candidate in this race?
Okay. I'm out of Congress. I get to remain Switzerland, private sector.
Fair enough. And I suppose you need to keep good relations in your future work with whoever may be in power. But
I'm a big fan and a very good friend of Majority Leader Scalise. I haven't seen an example of a courageous recovery in my entire life compared to what I witnessed with Steve laying face down on a baseball field where I thought he was already dead, recovering after zeroing his blood pressure out and coming back to where he's the majority leader of the U.S. House of Representatives. He's courageous, and he's in another courageous fight right now, fighting cancer, multiple myeloma. He's got a really good chance to be Speaker of the House. If you would have asked me back in 2018, if I ever thought Jim Jordan could get enough votes to be Speaker of the House, I would have laughed. There was no way Jim Jordan wanted his career to move in a path that would put him in line to be Speaker and have a realistic shot. But Jim has changed over the last two terms and has worked with people like me and others over the last 4 years to actually govern. And that is why Jim is a credible candidate right now. But to be honest with you, Brian, I don't see how either of them gets to 218 in the short term. And I know there's a lot of discussion about looking for another consensus candidate right now.
Why do you think neither of them gets to 218? Say more about that.
Well, I know there's some concern about what Steve's going through with his fight and
his cancer fight you're talking about.
Cancer fight right now. But there are people dug in, people that were loyal to McCarthy that may look at a Steve as not loyal enough. And then you've got on the other side, Jim Jordan. Jim has individuals that he serves with in Congress that are going to remember the days of him being somewhat a legislative terrorist, to blow up what I would have thought and what I voted for as principal compromises. They're not going to forget that and remember only the last 4 years of Jim Jordan working hand in hand with them and people like me. And also, President Trump came out, which I think is a tactical error on Jim Jordan's part and his team's part, and endorsed him. And I think there are members of Congress that are going to say, if Trump wants Jim Jordan, then there's no way I want that to be the environment that I'm running in, and therefore I'm going to be for somebody else.
You know, it's interesting because, those of us who, I'm sure you and others will complain that some of us in the media are obsessed with the January 2020 election and the insurrection attack on the Capitol that happened after that. But of course, both Representative Scalise and Jordan did vote with the people who objected to certifying the election after the attack. But I thought your other former colleague, Representative Liz Cheney, made an interesting point about Representative Jordan this past week. We have a little tape of this. This is from a speech in Minnesota. And just to remind listeners who may have been living under a rock for the last few years, Representative Cheney co-chaired the January 6th investigative committee. Let's listen to what she had to say in Minnesota.
Jim Jordan knew more about what Donald Trump had planned for January 6th than any other member of the House of Representatives. Jim Jordan was part of the conspiracy in which Donald Trump was engaged as he attempted to overturn the election.
I wonder, Rodney, do you think there will be enough Republicans willing to say no? Someone who is that closely tied to this attack on our institution is a bridge too far?
Well, there's going to be a wide variety of reasons why people vote for or against a speaker candidate. So, yeah, that's why I said earlier, I don't think you're going to see a resolution with the two candidates that we have right now in the next few days. I think it's crucial that we get a speaker in place that has power to run the House. And Democrats can be helpful with this. Democrats can choose to help govern. And in the end, they're going to take the politically easy way out. And frankly, I might have done that too. I'll be honest with you, especially if my district had changed from where it was. But in the end, Republicans have to choose their own speaker. And I certainly hope they can come together to make that happen. I'm just not convinced this is going to be over quickly. And another variable in this equation too, Brian, is that, Matt Gaetz and the folks who voted to remove McCarthy, it's also about attention. You don't have to look any further than last Sunday's TV shows. If you look at the Republicans who were on those shows, it was usually the members who blew the place up, who voted to oust Kevin McCarthy. And when they're getting that attention, they're not going to give it up that easily. They're going to want to get more and more and more. And how better to get attention than maybe be known as the people who stopped a new speaker from getting elected and going past the 45-day CR and into a shutdown. There's no rhyme or reason to the vanity that some of my former colleagues have shown me that they value more than their own constituents.
How important do you think it is for Republicans to have a speaker who is attuned to the needs of purple district members, such as you were for a decade?
Well, the speaker who was best attuned to those districts' needs was none other than Kevin McCarthy. He raised more money, he campaigned, and made sure that the whole team invested in those majority makers like I was. In the end, Kevin was also somebody who was able to invest and help in districts that were more primary oriented, like the one that I tried to run in and didn't get elected in. So he was the best overall speaker that we had. So yes, Jim Jordan's going to have a tough time convincing a lot of members of Congress in purple districts, that he's going to put their interests legislatively above the Freedom Caucuses. And then conversely, Steve Scalise is going to have to show that he can continue to put those districts at the forefront. And so will somebody who might not even be a candidate right now. It is imperative, but you have a standoff right now in the House where usually the governing Republicans are willing to stand behind someone and get behind them quickly. And they are keeping their powder dry because they've seen that the leverage that people like Matt Gaetz had to get what he wanted personally is something that they need to hold back and wait to ensure that they're going to be able to get leverage to maybe get rid of this motion to vacate by one member, maybe make some rules changes to open up transparency for legislating, et cetera. It's a whole new ballgame. We are living in a historical time that hasn't happened in our nation's history. And I certainly believe there's a lot of uncharted waters in front of us that won't be navigated as quickly as some hope.
I was hoping we could run through some of this sort of, let me just remind listeners, it's the 21st show. We're speaking with Rodney Davis, who represented Central Illinois in Congress for a decade. Nowadays, he is with Cozen O'Connor Public Strategies, a firm in Washington, also at Harvard this fall, at the Kennedy School Institute of Politics as a resident fellow there. And I want to run through some of the sort of fantasy politics scenarios that I've heard discussed. And just get, you know, maybe a quick reaction. Okay, there's a crisis in the Middle East. We need someone back in there ASAP. Maybe Kevin McCarthy can somehow come back or be brought back. What do you think of that?
He could be. I'd be for it. But that's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. What about, here's one, a small group of Republicans partner with Democrats to elect Hakeem Jeffries as the speaker?
I could say it, but you'd have to, you know, bleep me out. That's just BS.
Okay. Here's something you hear from a lot of people who want to sort of flex their knowledge of government. The speaker, I guess, does not actually have to be a member of the House. Do you ever see, I mean, is that ever seriously thought that there could be a non-member who gets in there as speaker?
No. But this is uncharted territory. If there was ever a time, this could raise the odds from 0 to maybe 1%, but there's still 99% chance that that's never going to happen.
Well, on that note, Speaker Donald Trump, ? We've seen the Fox News personality Hannity suggesting there's a draft movement. Representative Troy Nels of Texas has said he would nominate Trump. I wonder what you think of that possibility.
Well, let's just say Republicans elected Hakeem's BS. Donald Trump becoming speaker is effing BS.
Okay. Oof. We're going to have to hover over that dump button. And I guess it was, I did see that Illinois' own Representative Sean Casten pointed to Rule 26A of the House Republican Conference, which says a member of the Republican leadership shall step aside if indicted for a felony, which a sentence of 2 or more years imprisonment may be imposed. So how does this go? I mean, how long can the House remain functionally inoperative? And I guess maybe the broader question to get at here is, you know, there's one way of looking at this, that this is a personal vendetta of Representative Gaetz against Speaker McCarthy over an ethics investigation. But there's another way of looking at it, that this speaks to some of the deeper, broader divisions in the Republican Party in general in America right now. How do you see that?
Well, I agree with your assessment there. Republicans are more independent thinkers. We don't always agree on every issue. There is a problem within the Republican Party that's similar to a problem that's existed in the Democratic Party, where you have progressive left activists taking out members of Congress who we would consider ultra-progressive and liberal, but they're not perfect enough. And that's something that's happened in the Republican Party. And a lot of it has to do, in my opinion, with the increase in very politically gerrymandered congressional districts. State legislatures pack Republicans into very Republican-oriented districts that are not conducive to bipartisan compromises that I would have supported. I love the fact that I represented a competitive district because I think it made me a better member of Congress because I had to get to know everyone, not just people in my own party. But it's only going to get worse because of the districts that have been drawn for this decade, because they have become more partisan and less competitive. And that means a person who is less apt to work with the other side is more likely to get elected.
Let me read an email we got. This is from Terry. Didn't say where they were from, but this is the perfect time for the GOP and Democrats in Congress to reach across the aisle and really work for us. Most of us are centrists and are disgustingly tired of the right-wing extremists who are, quote, in charge, unquote, and holding America as hostage because they can't get their policies passed under normal circumstances. Shameful. Terry said. And we also heard sort of a similar comment from Randy in rural Peoria County, who said, here's the thing. What people see is both parties are choosing to have drama and fight rather than do. You and me, we are people that do. Solve that and save the nation. We're coming to the end of our time together, Rodney. What? I guess I'm at a bit of a loss as to where things go from here, right? I mean, we have this incredible divides. You've talked about the challenges of having people who, you know, there have always been these sort of wacky backbenchers in Congress, right, on both sides of the aisle. They either want attention, or maybe there are people with genuinely far out ideas that they can try to make more mainstream over time. But now they have this access to these specialized media channels where they can become famous and self-sustaining in their political careers. Just maybe you can talk about that as we end our conversation, and the sort of effect that that is having on the ability of our institutions of government to actually work.
Well, I can tell you, when I was a staffer working for a member of Congress, I would watch him come back home, and people were interested in his viewpoint of what was happening in Washington. And he would lay out what happened this week in Washington, what we addressed, what we voted on, why he voted a certain way. Fast forward that, I had similar experiences during the early part of my career, my 10-year career. But by the end, I'll tell you, Brian, most of the time I'd come home, I was dealing with individuals who would come up and they've read something on social media, and they're telling me that it's true. And I would talk to them about it not being true. But they didn't believe me, even though I was elected to be their eyes and ears. And this was not just people on the right, Ryan. This was many of the far left activists who came to visit me often during my champagne open office hours. Individuals that would come in with a political agenda and their own viewpoint, and what they read had to be true rather than listening to the facts and statistics that I gave them to prove that it wasn't. So individuals are using these modes of media access to get their news in an already biased way. And that's something that has to change. And that's something that I hope, you know, as you move forward, when you're asking questions like you do, and you do a very good job of asking very balanced questions. But I am amazed at Harvard. I'm amazed in Congress. I'm amazed just out in the public. People will ask a question in a manner that you completely know their political bias before you even are asked to answer. Hmm. And that, I think, is a microcosm of the end product of what is the narrow casting media environment that we have right now versus the old broadcasting environment.
Rodney Davis, I'm afraid we're going to have to end it there. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 24th.